Hello and welcome to the Eat PhD Team podcast, the podcast here to help you with your relationship with food and body by giving you evidence-based techniques to support yourself with a sprinkling of feminism, a dash of dismantling diet culture and a side of vulnerability as we share our own messy lives with you. I'm Emilia, a registered nutritionist and PhD with the sole purpose of making your life happier and healthier. If you love it, please do go wild and share it. And if you're ready for support with our coaching, details are in the show notes. Hello and welcome to episode number 284 of the Eat PhD Team podcast with myself and Anna. Hi Anna, how are you?
Hello, I am good, thank you. I'm actually quite warm. I've got the heating on. Like a little treat to myself.
Oh, what a treat indeed. What a treat.
How are you? How is Austin?
I'm well.
Don't make me too jealous with how warm it is, please.
No, well, right now, this morning it was freezing and windy, and I just took a call outside and I was like, had to have my hood up wrapped around my AirPods so that the wind wasn't getting the AirPods. And the weather's been warm in the afternoon. It's like the weekend, it was like 18, 19 in the afternoon, but then freezing in the morning as usual. But then the other day I was saying to someone this morning, like the other day it rained. And I was like, I just really want to go out for a walk in the rain. Like, I miss the rain. And so I just went out for a walk in the torrential rain. And it was just great. It wasn't freezing, though, which is obviously a little bit different. But I'm coming back to the UK. Well, I'll fly back in the next couple of days. So, woohoo!
Prepare yourself. It's cold.
I know. I was thinking this morning as I was cold. It's like it's 7 degrees and it's windy and it's only cold for the first couple of hours of the day, right? And I was like, oh, it's chilly. And I thought, come on now, pull yourself together. You're going to be in Edinburgh in a week. You will not think this is cold. So I know I'm ready for it though. I am ready.
Yeah, you've missed the rain. Well, I say that, touch wood. I'm sure there's more, but you missed
the rain. I've missed that day of rain. that storm. I always think about, do you remember the Beast from the East?
Yeah.
That was a March thing. So I'm quite excited for another Beast.
Last year it snowed in March as well, didn't it? Mm. I remember that. After a couple of days of epic training. Just what I needed with severe full body DOMS was trudging through 2 foot snow.
Yeah, you get DOMS from it, don't you? Because your whole neck and your back and your shoulders are all so tense. Like I'm not ready for that.
I'm tense anyway, let's be honest.
True. Yeah, you're just that tense sitting at your desk.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get started on the questions. Do you want to go first? Oh wait, no. Let's pull it back. Did you see my rant on my story yesterday? I'm even going to make a reel if I can bring myself to talk to a camera for the first time in a little while. About Peter Kay.
Oh yes. Yes, doesn't he look healthy?
Absolutely wild. So for reference, Daily Mail had put an article about Peter Kay, and I read the whole thing because I wanted to see exactly what they were saying. And they had a picture of him and he's lost weight. And they were like, Peter Kay is the picture of health as he, I don't know, walks along the street, whatever he said. And I just thought, so interesting that there's nothing in here about Peter says that he's been exercising 3 times a week and has started to eat more protein and fruit and vegetables. It's not that. There's nothing about his lifestyle at all. And regardless of, like, some people message me and they're like, oh, he's been going through X and Y. And that's actually not the point, although it does kind of lean into the whole concept that I was trying to describe of, like, when are we going to get over this idea that, like, celebrating weight loss all the time is a good thing? Like, he could well have lost that much weight because he's sick, and Daily Mail are like, oh, let's all congratulate him because he looks so healthy. Absolutely wild. Yes, body fat has an impact on your health, but it's not like body fatness is not an indicator of your health status, especially not a sole indicator of your health status. Again, yes, you can look at it in the context of other things, and if they'd said, or if Peter Kay had said, I've been doing X, Y, and Z of these healthy habits, and it's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. You losing body fat has probably been a health decision for you. But the assumption that smaller is better and smaller is healthier all the time, it is truly wild. And the more that we play into this narrative, the more we have this fear around gaining weight or getting bigger or being in a body that is, like, I'm not saying that gaining fat to, you know, a BMI of over 30, 35 is a healthy thing to do. But in terms of body fat levels, but that's very distinct from saying like everyone who gets smaller is always healthier, and any opposite of that is unhealthy. It was so picture perfect in terms of how messed up it was. I need to make a reel of it. I really can't. I can't be lazy on this one or pathetic on
It
this
did
one.
make me wonder as well, and this is whether like I'm definitely reading too much into it, but I wonder if it was a female celebrity in the same boat, whether they'd have been celebrated in the same way.
Probably, or would they? Well, I don't know, because they could have done it. They could have been like, oh, Anna Mundy looks unhealthy as she puts on a leggy display after dramatic weight loss. People say, fat
Or whether
friends say
it
Anna
just
Mundy's
kind of
gone too far.
go unnoticed because it doesn't fit. The women need to be an X amount of weight to be enough.
So interesting. Yeah, it just of course you've lost weight, because why wouldn't you lose weight because you're a woman?
Yeah, and it's just when she's a size whatever, then we'll start talking about it. Then she's gone too far
Yeah.
because we can't win.
Super interesting. Interesting. I don't know if anybody, hopefully no one who listens to this podcast reads Daily Mail, but I look at it because I think that stuff like this, I think this is what the masses of people look at, especially in January, and like this is where it's important for us to realize like that's the message, and that most people get more people see Daily Mail than they do see like our Instagram pages or listen to our podcast, for example. Yeah. Interesting. Okay, anyway, you can start with the questions now.
Okay. What do you do when you have been ill for a week and all habits have gone out the window? Try and start them all again at once or pick and choose.
I reintroduce things generally pretty gently. Because if you've been ill, like you might feel better, but your immune system may well still be recovering and still requiring that little bit more energy and that little bit more rest and recovery. So I like to be on the air on the side of safety and care, and just think, okay, what is going to make me feel great? So it might be that I would do, or I would say to my clients the same thing, to be fair. Let's focus this week maybe on starting the week with just getting more outdoor walking in again. And then in the middle of the week, maybe you feel like some restorative yoga is within your scope. And then towards the end of the week, if you want to go into the gym and do a full body session, light, like high reps in reserve, relatively low, moderate RPE, then do that. Depends how sick you are, right? If you've had food poisoning, like that can be brutal for a couple of days, but then a couple of days later, once you've refueled, you might feel fine. But if you've had something like COVID, obviously you're going to be a lot more gentle in your return. But it's not like we're not black and white 24-hour on-off creatures. And I think this is a really good example of this, of where it's not like you're ill one day and you're better the next and then that's it. Like your body is fluid and it's constantly going through things and fighting off this illness or, recovering from X or Y. So that is the one of the things that we focus on with the people that we work with is being fluid with your approach to all of these things, health habits, nutrition, etc.
Yeah, I often kind of say, because obviously clients that listen to this podcast, but for those who listen that aren't clients, we have a whole range of habits that people will be working on throughout the week. And some of them are based around nutrition, maybe movement, mindfulness, but there'll be lots of other things like woven into the week. And so for me, it's kind of going back to what we always talk about in terms of non-negotiables and fundamentals. It'll be like you were saying, easing yourself back in, but maybe picking like what's my one nutrition focus that I can focus on this week. And after illness, that might be if appetite is there, that might be right. I'm going to focus on lots of veggies because my body needs the nutrients to help it recover. It might be like you say, movement looks different. I'm going to get out for a walk and going back to some breath work if congestion is not an issue for that week, rather than trying to do it all at once and just feeling completely overwhelmed. And as you were saying, like catching that kind of all or nothing type thinking in thinking that you've fallen off track, it's not the case at all. It's just great awareness that, and understandably, that things have taken a back seat while you've been ill, and just picking back up where you left off in that sense.
Yeah, at the moment I'm working with a few people who are injured, a few people who are pregnant, and in different situations where someone who's just had COVID, where there is this kind of need to be so flexible because, take for example, like an injury, some days you feel like you can move, and some days you feel like it feels tighter, like it doesn't always feel the same. So you might have this rough plan of, okay, I like to train like this, but realistically, you can wake up one day and think, this is not going to be for me. And you have to be able to say, okay, well, this is my non-negotiables, and bringing your non-negotiables down is really important. Like sometimes people are like, oh, what's your non-negotiables? Oh, my non-negotiables are training 5 times a week and walking every single day outside for at least 45 minutes, doing yoga 3 times a week. And it's like, my non-negotiables realistically are movement once a day. Movement once a day, even when unless I'm like bed bound, because it might just be something like 5 minutes of restorative yoga, but it doesn't have to look like a certain thing. And being able to be flexible with that is crucial. Okay. How to deal with the sense of feeling like a child again when starting out with this process? I feel like all the big feelings I didn't deal with are coming up all at once, and it's chaotic and overwhelming, and at times paralyzing.
That's a really good way of wording it, because it can feel completely like that. I can very much relate. So I would first have that acceptance in how you feel, very understandable. So meet yourself with compassion. I am naturally also going to suggest some journaling, because when those feelings come up, just getting them out doesn't need to be a deep dive, but just getting those thoughts out onto paper, it can be really helpful. And I would also try to give yourself some time, not even necessarily every day, but maybe a couple of times over the week, to just sit with those feelings. Because interesting, I was talking about it with a client before, who's been obviously she's been practicing surfing the urge. And initially you think that that's kind of to do with, and it is to do with, kind of surfing the urge to turn to food, to binge. But what she's been finding now, and what she shared with me today, was how she can actually sit with those feelings without needing to do anything with them. That she can hold space for them, sit with them non-judgmentally. And I think that's a really important part of the process.
Yeah, I absolutely agreed. It can be really tempting to just try and like get rid of these things as quickly as possible. And actually, it's that drive to get rid of things that often lead us to do things like overeat or binge eat. I would get curious, because I agree with everything that you've said. I think on top of that, I would get curious about these feelings. I think the fact that you can articulate it so well as like chaotic and overwhelming and paralyzing. If you haven't used the feelings wheel yet, then congratulations on your emotional granularity. Even if you have, congratulations on your emotional granularity, because naming and recognizing these feelings is crucial to the first step in terms of self-regulation when they do arise. So that's fantastic. I would lean into probably more of the somatic side of things at this point too, in terms of when things feel paralyzing, it's like you're in that freeze state, right? And we often think about self-soothing and coming down from that fight or flight state, which is maybe something that you would look at if things feel chaotic. So what does chaotic feel like in your body? Maybe your heart is racing, maybe you're really fidgety, maybe you are moving around a lot, maybe you're sweaty, maybe you're a bit shaky. Okay, so what are your self-soothing strategies to help support your body to again self-regulate in those moments, to bring some parasympathetic dominance into down regulate? But on the flip side of that, when things feel paralyzed and you're stuck in that freeze state, what does that feel like in your body? Maybe you feel like you are just like you're in bed and you don't want to get out of bed, or you're on the sofa and you don't want to get out of the sofa, you don't want to talk to anyone, you don't want to do anything. Okay, well, what tools would help you there? Maybe it's some upregulation tools. Maybe it's doing a bit of movement or connecting with friends. Or I think with the paralysis bit, maybe it's a bit of both. Like I think it's with I'm trying to say here. When we're like in that chaotic, like fight or flight response, it's quite obviously we need this down regulation. And when we're in that kind of very down apathetic space, it's quite obvious that we need up regulation. But I think when you feel kind of paralyzed, it's like, is it paralyzed and you're on edge, or is it paralyzed and you're like out, freeze, apathetic? And do you need some up regulation? So get curious about what it feels like in your body, and then maybe have create a list of tools or one or two things even that help upregulate and downregulate. Because again, it's not about getting rid of those feelings, but it's about being able to sit and be okay within those feelings. And in order to do that, you want to be able to regulate your body to allow yourself to do that.
I eat a lot of, always struggle to say these. So I eat a lot of tofu and edamame beans slash soy milk, etc., and rely on soy a lot for protein source. So this client is vegan. There's a lot of conflicting information online, some saying too much soya can be bad for you or have a negative effect on your hormones and you should limit your servings per week. Is there any truth in this, or am I fine?
You're fine. But it's interesting. Usually they say the association is to do for women, it's to do with breast cancer risk. And actually, I did some research around this for EIQ Nutrition. I think we maybe got asked a question on this on the EIQ Live. And actually the meta-analyses that I found, or a couple, suggested that increase in soy intake was actually associated with a reduction in overall cancer risk. Especially the one of the specific studies was looking at breast cancer. I don't know. I think the fear from it came from, like, Alan, my friend, he always talks about soy boys. Like, there's this idea of a soy boy. Like, they're not a real person, which is why it's okay to mock it. But like this, like, kind of like what bodybuilders and fitness people, some fitness people will be like, oh, this vegan soy boy who doesn't have any gains and he's really unhealthy. And I had this even conversation with someone here, because it's so interesting here, because their nutrition knowledge is so back, like so far behind. And so it's far behind in the sense that they don't have evidence or science for a lot of what they say, but it's ahead in that they come up with all the trends of things that you should be avoided. So I was having a debate with someone about seed oils the other day. I find it really difficult because I'm like, it's not opinion. It's not my opinion. It's what we know from the evidence to be true. Like, that's not the same as me being like, well, my opinion is that seed oils are actually good for you. Like, no, it's based on the evidence. Anyway, regardless of that, soy is another one that comes, I think, this is probably from over here. But no, you're absolutely fine to eat soy. The reviews that we have suggest. I'm just going to see if I can find one. This one's a 2016 one. Let's just see. This is more a general health update one. Oh, I love when they don't put a wee conclusion in the abstract. You expect me to read the actual paper. The absolute audacity. Mental health, fertility. Where's the conclusion? Yes. So I wonder where I wrote about soy in terms of the different types of soy. Yeah, we just have to look at overall nutritional quality of a particular soy food. Since many westernized soy foods include a variety of non-soy ingredients, there are no formal recommendations for soy intake. Population in clinical studies involving adults suggests benefits are associated with approximately 2 to 4 servings per day. Ideally, soy foods are incorporated into the diet by displacing less healthy foods and as part of an overall healthy diet designed to lower risk of chronic disease, such as the approach represented by the portfolio diet, which is a specific type of diet or dietary pattern. So yes, you're fine. Soy is a great addition to your diet. Okay. Very passionate about soy. I feel like I'm surrounded by a lot of people who talk about weight, body image, wanting to be skinny, and I find it really uncomfortable. It's mainly people in work, and it just seems normal. The type of people they are, I feel like I can't say anything. How would you overcome this?
I mean, listen to last week's podcast around talk on diet talk. I know it's not the same topic, but I think there needs to be that conversation in like, I don't want to talk about this. These are my boundaries. Well, you don't need to say these are my boundaries, but I'm not interested in this kind of talk. Would you mind we talk about something else? If they're people at work, like, do you need to be having conversations with them? Are they the type of people that you want to be spending your time with? And if they're friends, then having that honest conversation with them is so important.
Yeah, I think what you've said here in terms of it's mainly people in market, it just seems normal. The type of people they are, I feel like I can't say anything. If that were me and it was in work and I felt like they're not going to get it, which for me was bodybuilding, like they were never going to get it, I just didn't talk about it. I just would just not be part of those conversations, or I would change the subject. And then that would be that. I wouldn't even. But what's the point? I think sometimes we're so, and not you, as I'm using like as an extreme example here, sometimes we get really into our own heads of like our way is the best way, which obviously your work with Becca is the best way, but we expect other people to understand or to want the same things as we do, and they probably don't, and they probably don't care, and they probably just want to talk about diets, and that feels like the right thing for them to do. And realistically, it's not for us, and it doesn't sound like you want to do this. It's not for us to make them change their minds. That's their lives, and they can do what they want. But we don't have to expose ourselves to it. And if you change the subject without even acknowledging it, then no one's going to be like, "Oh, you changed the subject." You think they're not going to go back and say, I want to keep talking about sugar-free jellies for another hour of my life. And if they do, quit your job and get some new foods, because that is boring. But yeah, honestly, I would try not to make it too much of a thing, and I would try to just change subject or leave the room, or not. I probably wouldn't even bother having the conversation about it.
I moved away after gaining weight to recover my period. There were lots of reasons for moving, but there was also a part of me that wanted to do this so that I could not be judged so much and be myself where people don't know what I used to be like, thin slash fit, etc. But now I'm going to be seeing a lot of people back home this year and feel like the pressure is on to lose weight before I see them. Any tips on helping this mindset around weight and feeling confident with these people again?
Ooh, good question. And I definitely think that you're not alone in this, whether it's gaining weight through HA recovery, gaining weight just because you gain weight, like we gain weight, we lose weight, we change. And when you've not seen someone for a while, a lot of people will go into like justification mode. So example, this is not you person who's asked this question, but an example might be, say you've got like a group chat with your old friend. And you go in and you say, "Oh, I can't wait to see you all. Just FYI, I regained my period, which is amazing. And as a result, I've gained a bit of weight." And we like almost get ahead of the game. There's like this desire to like preempt any judgment by being like, "Oh, well, I know that I've gained weight." So that it feels like we've controlled any potential for negativity from someone else, which is really sad. It also highlights just this weight bias again that we had kind of talking about at the beginning of. You're much healthier now, which is incredible. And realistically, if we were looking at like your friends want you to be healthier. So they would be so ecstatic that you're healthier if they knew all the ins and outs of everything, and let alone the fact that they probably don't care about your body. They're not thinking about your body, they're thinking about you. They're thinking about how you make them feel, about your energy, about your glow, about your joy. And after HA recovery, usually all of these things improve. Your glow, your joy, your sex drive, your banter, like all these. And I'm not saying if you have HA, you don't have these things, but often when you regain your period, it's just like you regain more of a sense of yourself, is what I mean. And so your friends are going to notice all of these things. They're not going to notice your body. So I think it's more about maybe you thinking about, why do I think that They're going to be focused on my body. Why do I fear that they're going to judge me for being in a bigger body? And that's totally understandable because we all have been in, had this narrative ingrained on us for so long through diet culture and things like the Daily Mail that are like smaller is better, smaller is better, smaller is better. So you're automatically thinking, oh, well, I'm not going to be as good anymore because I'm in a slightly larger body. But that's just not the case. Like, think about thought versus fact. Is this thought or is this fact? That's just a thought. Is it a helpful thought? No. And then maybe you're working with Becca, and I know she likes thought postponement and thought redirection. So maybe when you do, if you do find yourself falling into these stories, can you practice some of that? Can you bring your attention back to the present moment? Can you postpone that thought into a certain time of day where you don't allow yourself to get too lost in those thoughts? But the curiosity part, obviously, first is really crucial.
I would add, sometimes it can be really helpful to write a list, again with the journaling, right? But just to kind of have a think, okay, what are the things that I love about my friends? And what you think their list of you might look like. And just see, like, in the list of your friends, does their body shape, does their body weight even feature on what you love and care and like respect about them? Chances are no, but like you were saying, it's just those spiral thoughts based on your maybe own judgments of yourself that you're having these anxieties about what they're going to think. And it reminded me too, I'm going to share this because it was awesome. When I had my Christmas meetup with my friends that we don't I nearly missed because I got my days mixed up and we don't see each other very often. So miracle that I made it. But my friend, and I know we've had conversations, my friend sat there and said, and it wasn't like the justification. It was like, when we had our Christmas meal last time, I hadn't had my period for 18 months. And this year I've now had 11 consecutive cycles. And that was so incredible. And she's talked about it to all of us, like individually and as a group. And we're all just like, well, have a drink to celebrate. Cheers. And
Amazing. Yeah, because you're just so buzzing for your friend to be healthy.
there was no, like, well, I certainly, and I don't think the group of friends were like, oh yeah, well, you can definitely tell. I mean, because her body is not something that I notice.
Yeah. Think about it. Like, think about people that you see all the time. Like we see each other every week on Zoom. You don't look at me one day and be like, oh, you've got more wrinkles today. Because you see, like, you just are like, you just see your friends as, even on Zoom, you look at them in the eye or you're looking at them laughing. And well, Anna's actually looking at me like she wants to like cut me off and talk, according to someone on YouTube last week. Someone said on our YouTube, one of our YouTube shorts, girl at the top looks like she just wants to, what was it? She's just desperate for the other one to shut up so she can talk.
Yeah.
That's
I
so
mean,
Anna.
I know I have to be, I do, I am someone that has to be mindful of my face because it just clearly says what's on my mind.
I mean, I don't notice. This is the point. Maybe I don't notice because I'm too busy talking, you know. Wait,
Yeah.
you would shut up. Okay. Is it me? It is. How? Oh. How, okay, start again. What was that sound? Crikey, Mikey. Okay. What can I do when I find myself in this drama over and over again? Quote. I have to take care of everything, do everything by myself. There's so much to do. Everything gets stuck on me, quote unquote, drama. And then my in brackets, my husband doesn't do anything, which is rationally not true because he takes care of other things.
I'm making a big assumption here, but I would say the majority of the people that I work with, and I would say probably client base on the whole, are fixers, rescuers. So we take on more, and I say we because I am recovering rescuer, we take on more and more. There's that expectation that we often put on ourselves that we need to do it all, that we should do it all, that we need to have it all under control so we can be there for everybody and everybody else has a nice experience. So I would check in on the expectations and the pressures that you're putting on yourself. I would start, and it's great that you can recognize, because I think sometimes I can certainly get in my own head that nobody around me is helping, and I'm like, that I don't, what do you call it, but I, why am I doing this all when no one else is doing anything around me, when actually they are, but I'm not communicating my needs. So maybe there's some room for, okay, I need to practice some vulnerability here. I can't do it all, and that's okay because I'm human. Asking for help, asking for some support, one of the best things that you can do. And you've already done it because you're here. So you've done one hard conversation and baby steps.
So much easier to ask a stranger for help than it is to ask a partner for help. Isn't it? Isn't it? Why is that? Again, because we don't want to be vulnerable, because we take our entire identity as this fixer role. And the thing is, when you identify in that way, whether you acknowledge it or not, it's very hard to let it go. Because if you think about being in this fixer role, and that's what your entire relationship history, I don't mean romantic relationships, I mean all relationships, or a large majority of your relationships have been built on you playing that role, why would you want to let it go when you feel like that is how you build connection and create loving relationships? You don't want to let it go. So asking for help, or falling into this thing of like, I have to do everything myself, as much as when you're saying it, you're not saying it in like a, I get to do everything myself, but inside that feels safe and familiar to you. So it's like, objectively, you don't want to be doing it all yourself, but internally it feels safe to be in that role. And so to let it go is hard, to ask for help is hard, but it is about, the first step is about acknowledging that, and acknowledging that you are getting something from being this person. I don't know what the, it sounds like your husband does do stuff, right? But it may be, if you do a larger majority of things, then it's providing something for you, a sense of safety, a sense of connection, or what you feel is a sense of connection. It's giving you something, and you have to recognize what that is in order to be able to let that go, because you need to see, okay, I can find that actually elsewhere in a healthier outlet. One of the best things for connection is asking for help, is being vulnerable, not doing it all and then saying, why do I have to do all of this stuff? We all, like, honestly, so many of us do it. And there's another element of being a woman and conditioned in this way of having to be selfless. And we think that part of being a woman is martyring ourselves and doing it all. And again, we have to hold ourselves accountable to that and say, like, is that actually the model of a woman that I think is right, or that I think is the model that I want to portray and live in? So getting curious about that. And then I think kind of more on a practical level, like when it comes to like a romantic relationship, it's like, what do you both contribute? Can you be objective about it? Can you say, like, okay, my contributions are, you know, household things or financial things or a bit of both, or kid stuff, whatever it is, and my partner, their contributions are this. Does this seem a little bit equal? Because one of the worst things is like that resentment feeling of feeling like you are doing all and resenting it. But it's like, again, like what you were saying, Anna, if you haven't articulated that's what you need, or if you haven't articulated that actually this contribution thing is way off in your opinion, can you talk about it? Can we make this more equal? You haven't said any of these things. You're just going to be resentful. And if you're resentful, then it's not going to be conducive to a healthful relationship. And we say these things not from like being experts on dating or romantic relationships, but more just on like this, the awareness of the patterns that we show up in relationships, whatever those relationships may be. Because we are not white men with dating podcasts. We don't know everything.
Just going to put this in there because it came to mind as well. And this is a slight tangent, still related to obviously the question, but something whilst I'm still in my deep dive around stress, it's like thinking how obviously you'll be working through emotional regulation and how those kind of thoughts and stories that you're telling yourself are adding to the stress that you already feel. And actually, if you're able to notice them, can you then challenge them and go, I have that reminder to you that I don't have to do it all. I can communicate my needs, and how soothing that then feels, so that you can be more open to having that conversation with your partner or whatever else.
Agree. Go for it.
It's me. I feel guilty after a couple of drinks. Anxiety is always higher. Any way of coping with this?
Think we spoke about this, didn't we, in the last couple of podcasts? Anxiety. Don't drink. Reduce the amount that you drink. Look at the purpose that alcohol is serving for you. Is it actually helping you? In any way, and I drink wine, like I drink tequila. Like I'm not saying don't drink if you want to drink. But I think I definitely went through a phase where alcohol was creating more anxiety, and it was because I had other things going on, and so I stopped drinking for a while because I realized it was adding to my anxiety. So I think maybe the answer is just taking it out or reducing it. Then I would also think, like, what is the anxiety it's creating? Is it based on anything that else is going that's going on that you could actually get curious about and look at, and maybe it's something that you want to change. For example, if I'm having, I get anxiety dreams. I'm having a couple at the moment, actually. I get anxiety dreams, and usually it's about something that either I feel uncertain about or I've not given enough of my focus or energy. And anxiety is not often rational, it's rarely rational. But I do think sometimes, like PMS, sometimes these times can shed a bit of a light into areas of our life that maybe we would want to spend a little bit more time or put a little bit more energy or change something or just get a little bit comfortable, work on our relationship with uncertainty. Yeah, that's what I'd say.
Yeah, nothing to add.
Okay, let's do one more. How can I monitor my weight with a rational perspective?
I think it can be sometimes really helpful to weigh in more regularly to see the fluctuations and just go, yeah, look, this is just a number, it's just data. I don't know what the goal is here, but it can help lose that attachment when you know that, yeah, I've still been really consistent with actions that are supportive of my goal. But then sometimes it can swing the other way, and actually weighing in less frequently or not weighing in at all, because depending on the goal, again, do you need to know your weight? Is
Yeah.
that relevant?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly that. Like, it might be really helpful. We don't know if you're trying to maintain weight, lose weight, gain weight. We don't know, right? So it can be important information. Maybe your coach, for whatever reason, is requesting that you work on this relationship, right? I think at the end point, ideally, you want to get to a place where most people don't weigh regularly and roughly maintain their healthy habits, etc., etc. Like you said, some people can get more rational about it by weighing every day and seeing all these fluctuations. And for some people, that becomes really obsessive and can get preoccupied by it. I remember looking at a bikini competitor once back in the day, and she posted about how she weighed herself at night and she was freaking out because she'd gained weight. And I was like, this is extreme disordered eating. And people are like, yeah, babe, that happens to me too. And it's like, oh my word. Wild. I think on top of like the objective things of that, because you can get curious about that. You could take your weight and then take like journal or log, like how do you feel? What do you feel after you take your weight? How does that impact the rest of your day? How does that impact your behaviors? What about when you don't take your weight? How do you feel for the rest of the day? How does that impact your behaviors? And empower yourself to be like, okay, well, when I don't do that, I feel this way, or when I do, I feel this way. And again, if you have to take your weight, or if you're working towards something with your relationship with the scale weight, then look at, okay, well, if this is how I feel, what do I need to meet that feeling after I've taken my weight before I then carry on about my day, and soothing and meeting that feeling so that it doesn't impact your behaviors. And then I would also say, read as much as you can around weight bias. The whole topic of today's podcast really is weight bias. If you have this weight bias and this weight stigma, you and partake in that either internally or around others, you'll find it very, very difficult to release that judgment when you gain weight. Okay, thank you so much. Thank you, Anna. Keep your questions coming in. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. And as always, if you did, please do feel free to like, share, subscribe, and review. And if you would like to chat to me, then you can find details of my Instagram in the show notes.